This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teik. Every year, QS Enrollment Solutions, a unit of the company that publishes the QS World University Rankings, puts out an international student survey. The survey examines the preferences of students who have expressed an interest to pursue higher education outside their home country. What do students want these days, and how are universities catering to these considerations? With me to discuss the findings from this year's survey is QSES Managing Director Andy Nicole. Andy, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
So what were the highlights this year? How is it different from previous years, the learnings or key findings?
Yeah, I think with the International Student Survey, we've put a lot of effort into building this survey over time. We're in our sixth year now of the survey. This is the largest number of individual students we've had to date taking part, which is fantastic. Almost 70,000 prospective students this year. From over 190 different countries. So we've been able to build a really credible data set over time, but really pleasing this year to add a large number of respondents. And really what we're seeing is a fairly consistent view from students around what's important to them as they consider the many options available to them to study overseas. And really what we're seeing is that students are focused on four key factors, really. The first is quality. Students are making a massive investment in higher education when they go overseas. There's a popular misconception, I think, that international students are very wealthy. Again, our survey this year has made clear that over 50, around 54% of our student respondents have a family income of less than $25,000 US annually. So education is a massive investment, a family investment for many international students. And when they go overseas, they're looking for a quality experience. So really, they're looking for strong teaching quality that links links with their future career aspirations, because that issue of quality is linked to a great extent to employability, future employability. Students, understandably as well, want to study in a country they feel safe and secure in. For a young adult heading overseas, maybe for the first time without their parents, safety is really important. So they want to be in a place, a country, and specifically a city which is safe, and they feel it's a welcoming place for them to be for their studies. Affordability, absolutely important, massive investment for a student and family. So they want to make sure that the course is affordable to them, their family, and that the living costs, by extension, are reasonable as well. And finally, and most importantly, is the course. Our research again this year has confirmed that students choose their course of study first, then they choose their country, and then they choose the university, the individual university they want to study in. So the course choice continues to be the key driver of decision-making for the student.
Yeah. Aside from the perception, I guess, that international students are wealthy, these four criterions that you've laid out, quality, safety, affordability, and career outcomes, aren't these what we already know? Did this survey confirm that these are the considerations that have the most, that students and parents give the most weight to?
Yes, yeah, so we're clearly, I think there are various factors at play here. I think one thing that we continue to achieve around correcting misconceptions is that students are somehow leaving their home country to study for a lifestyle or kind of an experiential kind of opportunity. Of course, that's important. Studying in an overseas country, engaging with a new culture, that's important. But certainly the key drivers are the return on investment. And that's what we're seeing year on year, and seeing an increasing focus from students on the value for money. And that comes through in those factors that we just talked about before around quality, kind of affordability, and course choice. What we're seeing this year is that we have to ensure that that universities, and this is where universities can learn to engage with their international student audience in a more effective way, is them communicating that they have staff that provide great teaching quality, that their staff have exposure to real-world experience, which is going to support the teaching quality and, by extension, the employability prospects is really important. But one of the biggest factors we found this year is just how important employability is for students. Certainly, a university that has a high graduate employment rate is much more attractive to an international student than a university with a high student satisfaction score. That's something that we've seen, the dial shift in terms of this importance of employability, this ROI. Yeah. That's more important than the experience and the satisfaction the student has whilst they're studying. So, of course, everybody wants to enjoy their degree and their time. But the most important thing is employability.
Mm. I'm glad you brought ROI. We'll talk more about the corporatization of universities later in this interview. That's very interesting that you mentioned cultural immersion or the exposure to different countries and way of life is not actually what people are looking for, because I think anecdotally, I suppose, that's what the biggest selling point that when people talk about why do you want to go abroad. So did you find that from the Malaysians that you've surveyed or the Malaysian respondents that you've spoke to for this survey, are their sentiments or sensibilities unique, or did they deviate much from the general findings of the survey?
Yeah, it's a great question, Entek. And what we've done through our survey, so since we have participants in this survey from over 190 countries, we're able to dive into that data in a range of different ways. So we can isolate kind of Malaysian student responses from other countries, and we've done a lot of analysis, as you would expect, on those Malaysian student responses as it impacts our UK university customers in the UK and Australia and here in Malaysia as well. Really, I think that what we're seeing from students in Malaysia is a response that's fairly consistent across Southeast Asia and ASEAN, where kind of the findings that the areas which most kind of concern a student when they're concerned about kind of certain factors as they're preparing to study overseas is really they're concerned about cost of living. So, obviously Australia, the UK, more expensive than Malaysia. So what will the cost of living be like? Paid for my tuition fees. I've still got to spend between 1 and 3 years in country. That's a concern for students in Malaysia and the broader region. By extension to that, students are very keen to find out about scholarship opportunities. So many universities have scholarship programs. Students on average are applying predominantly for around 5 universities. They don't just focus, Malaysian students just don't focus on one institution. They're looking at applying to up to 5. They are sophisticated consumers. They are, information is increasingly transparent. If you look at the ways that students can get information about study. Obviously, when I first started engaging with students in Asia 20 years ago, the internet wasn't a source of university course information. They relied on prospectuses or the British Council or IDP, or there were very few ways of getting information on a lot of different university choices. But universities now provide information in printed and electronic format. Students are able to receive that information from universities and third parties. So they're very sophisticated consumers. They're applying to multiple institutions. They're interested in scholarships. So they're able to review the opportunities across a range of options for them. But still, that cost of living and the availability of scholarships is important. And again, what we find in Malaysia and in the region, that safety, getting a job, finding accommodation, these are all things that students focus on. Right. And is obviously an increasing focus as they get closer to studying.
Yeah. Aside from the pull factors of, you know, affordability and quality, are there any commentary or findings on what are the push factors of why people want to go abroad to study, especially Malaysians? If you could comment on whether these align with why people in other parts of the world want to pursue a foreign, pursue their further studies in a foreign university as well.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. So there are certain, if you look at the big picture, look at the OECD's figures on students leaving their home country to study abroad. Year on year, that's increased since the mid-1970s. So there's no evidence that there are any less students going overseas for all or part of their studies. So this phenomenon, if you like, of students leaving their home country to study is growing and continues to grow, especially as there are increasing numbers of middle-class consumers who can afford that opportunity. So I don't see any, in a kind of a broader analysis, any kind of indications that is eroding. I think that's still a massive opportunity for universities globally. And if you look at Australia last year, over 70,000 new international students arrived in Australia last year. And it's worth, in terms of the benefit to the overall economy, something in the region of 30 to 40 billion Australian dollars. Yeah. So education is massively important as a an export industry, if you like, for many countries. If you look at some of the key you know, drivers here in Malaysia, I think they are different than the broader region. So if you look at India, for example, the participation rate in higher education is still very small, kind of late teens in terms of school leavers who go on to higher education. So for many students, it's highly competitive there to get a university place in their home country. So they may be forced, if you like, to look at options outside their home country. That's not the case for Malaysia. If I look back over the last 20 years and my engagement coming to Malaysia over that time, is Malaysia's done an amazing job around building capacity in the local public universities. And you also can see some of the success of the local public and private universities in global league tables and rankings. So Malaysia's done a great job of both increasing quality, but also increasing the number of places. You know, when you visit universities here in Malaysia, you know, the some of the campus facilities, the size of the private universities, they're not just good in Malaysia, they're good on a global scale. There's been amazing investment in both public, private, and foreign branch campuses here in Malaysia, which the government has supported over the years. So Malaysia has a around late 30% kind of participation in higher education. So a student in Malaysia doesn't have to go overseas for a higher education. There are plenty local opportunities to study in the public or the private or the foreign universities that are established here. So
but they still do, though. It's an increasing number of students who still choose to go abroad.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why?
I think for a range of reasons we're seeing. I think clearly there's an employability dimension to this. We know that the world of work and career is increasingly competitive. The opportunities are more global. So students in Malaysia may choose to study either all or part of their degree overseas to get experience of a new culture, to get experience of a what they may perceive as a higher quality or a more differentiated experience. So that when they come back to Malaysia or if they enter the job market globally, they are better positioned to be successful. So if a student from Malaysia goes to, you know, a high-ranking global university, University of Melbourne or LSE in London, that will give an edge, you know, in the job market in the future. So certainly there's that push. Clearly, there are... you know, strong kind of connections with global cities like Melbourne and London, where there's a preference for parents to send their students to those cities where they have some affinity. So clearly there's a family aspect here. And in Malaysia, you clearly see there are kind of historical kind of connections as well. You know, I have a Malaysian friend here where there's three generations of that family that's gone to LSE. Yeah, so that's a kind of a heritage there, and there's a connection with the UK that continues. So absolutely, I think Malaysia's improved both the quality and the volume of university places locally. But students will still go overseas to either create a competitive advantage for themselves in terms of employment or to experience, you know, kind of study opportunities in another country.
Let's take a short break before we come back to the business side of things from the university perspective. I'm speaking today to Andy Nicole about what students are looking for in an international education. Don't go away, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. My guest today is Andy Nicole from QS Enrollment Solutions, a unit from QS, which produces the annual survey about how students decide which universities they want to attend. The survey focuses specifically on students choosing to further their studies abroad. So, Andy, you alluded to the fact that since the 70s, this has been an ever-expanding pie, the international education industry. How do university administrators, especially those focusing on international students, what has been their feedback or concern? Is this a market that's getting ever more competitive? Are they, you know, putting more bells and whistles to their offering in terms of campus offerings, facilities, and whatnot? Is this an arms race, you know, to for lack of a better word?
Yeah, and Tech, I think what's really interesting, if I look back over kind of my career in international higher education, is you know, universities have had to up their game, if you like, in terms of how they engage not just with international students but with domestic kind of student cohorts as well. You know, for example, to give an example from the UK, there will be a significant amount of competition for students, domestic students in the UK, with A-level results. There'll be a lot of, some universities have a process called clearing, where they've still got places left that they're wanting to fill. There'll be some movement within those institutions, given that, you know, students' grades may have gone up or down since they originally applied. So, you know, competition for those students is fierce. If you look at kind of international student recruitment, you know, it's something that, of course, universities want to be international. They want to have international research profiles. They want to have large numbers of international students on campus because that's what a university is all about, yeah? But beyond those kind of cultural and kind of societal factors, you've got clearly a drive from a recruitment perspective to ensure that that universities want to recruit international students in increasing numbers because they pay fees. So universities invest those fees in building infrastructure, you know, attracting the best academic talent, improving kind of their university offering. So public universities, whilst they invest all of the income, if you like, that they get from domestic and international fees in buildings, in facilities, in research equipment, all of those things, they need large cohorts of international and domestic students on campus to make those plans viable. So there is a lot of competition for international students.
Do you see a saturation point coming anytime soon? Because most of these flows have come from countries from the global south to the global north, isn't it? And it's primarily absorbed, most of the benefits have been absorbed by universities that are in the west or English speaking.
Yes, I think it's a great point. So certainly there are large numbers of international students in the countries that you would expect, in the US, in the UK, in Australia, increasingly in Canada and New Zealand. So there is clearly a benefit to those countries, those universities that have recruited international students over the past 20 or 30 years. So yes, clearly there's been that benefit. If you look at Australia, I mentioned before that there were 70,000 new additional international students in Australia last year. That picture is nuanced. There are certain institutions in Sydney and Melbourne that are do have capacity issues that in terms of their very popular destinations for students, those cities, the quality of those institutions attract a lot of students.
Meaning you have to turn away students.
In some, group of eight, which are the research intensive universities, absolutely. But the picture in Australia is nuanced. There are other states in Australia. If you look at Western Australia, Perth, where the market share of international students is falling back. For some universities there. But the reasons for that are complex. It's also relates to post-study work opportunities, kind of cost of living. There's a range of kind of factors that impact that. So I think there is competition, clearly. There was an article released recently in the UK Higher Education Press around how the UK may lose its dominant position to Australia in terms of absolute number of international students over the next couple of years. So the UK has always been second to the US in terms of absolute numbers, but that position is under threat from Australia. So UK universities over the last few years, because of visa regulations that the government's imposed, because of perhaps some perceptions around Brexit, the UK's found it tough to recruit international students in the same numbers that it has previously, because obviously visas is a core part of that. Yeah. So definitely there's a competitive kind of environment for recruitment. Over the coming years, I think we're going to see a really exciting shift. Here in Malaysia, we've seen over the last couple of years that Xiamen University from China has opened here in Malaysia and is recruiting extremely well. Both from students here in Malaysia, but also from students in China that want to have an experience outside of their home country here. Chinese universities are increasing the number of English language places on their programs, and increasingly students in Western countries realize that they have an edge in their careers if they get exposure and experience in the large economies here in the region. So in China, India, etc. So, I think over the next few years, these factors are going to the need for students in the Northern Hemisphere to experience the economies here in Asia will result in a lot more student mobility. So, you will find here in Malaysia that universities that have foreign branch campuses here, like Nottingham and Monash and Curtin. These institutions are seeing large numbers of their home students come and spend some time, on their programs here. Mm-hmm. You look at the MBA market, students that are paying exorbitantly high fees in the US and in the UK for MBAs are increasingly seeing that they can get a high quality MBA in a part of the world where the economies are very exciting. So in Singapore, in Hong Kong. So there's a lot more mobility at that executive level as well. So I think those old patterns are changing.
Yeah. On that point you make about Britain maybe losing its second position to Australia, how does the industry or the education sector see themselves in relation to the demands of government leaders? Like, is it always more international students are better or less regulation is better? Or do they see their role as also a form of public service that they have to serve the interests of their country, in that if having less international students is better for the country, perhaps then that's what the direction they should go?
Yeah, so look, I would say there's a fair bit of frustration in kind of executive positions within UK universities around the visa framework, if you like. The UK government has decided, for good or ill, to include international students within the overall visa numbers, and they have a desired interest to reduce the overall number.
It's harder to stay back after you graduate to work also, isn't it?
So that depends on who you, I think, on who you ask. I mean, I think there is clearly a government imperative to reduce net migration. And there's clearly a view within many institutions that having international students in that number is not the right way to go. And, you know, I think as someone who works with universities to support their international recruitment and retention, you know, we would agree with the universities on that one. I think clearly, you know, international students don't overstay their visas. I think less than 1% of students in the UK. So we believe that those immigration numbers shouldn't include international students. Because they're providing a whole range of benefits to the UK in terms of culture, fee income, contributing to research, all of these great things. So, you know, clearly there's an issue there. To the government's credit in the UK, I think there is the government's listening, and they are streamlining and making the visa process more straightforward for a range of key countries. So there's some positive movement there. But yeah, I think, you know, universities want the government to support increasingly that kind of international education agenda.
Yeah. One way to work around that is, you mentioned as well, foreign branch campuses.
Yes.
Or online education services. Is that a growing trend you see, like the MOOCs and, you know, foreign campuses? Or is that a blip in, or is that a fad that will go away?
It's a great question. So, look, I think we saw kind of over the last kind of 15 or so years, there was significant growth in foreign branch campuses overseas. So, obviously, here in Malaysia, we know a number of Australian and UK universities opened up here and have been successful over a prolonged period of time and are now part of the fabric of the university system here. Similarly, you've seen that kind of growth in the Middle East as well, of UK and Australian universities in the main establishing a presence there. To a lesser extent, this has happened in South Africa as well. So there was a lot of growth in that area. You know, that growth, there's kind of the university desire and for the investment and the CapEx investment and the complexity of that is one driver, but also there's the willingness of governments to accept more of those. So in Malaysia now, I think we have a moratorium on additional foreign branch campuses. That may change, but that's where we are now. So there are complex factors that are at play here. What we're seeing in the UK and what we're seeing through our international student survey research, we've been asking students about their perceptions of the UK around Brexit. And we've asked those students through the survey that should the UK become, you know, perhaps a more difficult option for them to study within the UK, would they be interested in UK universities having branch campuses in Europe? So there's been a significant desire and interest in UK universities from that student perspective having branch campuses in Europe. And we saw over the last couple of weeks, Coventry University in the UK open a campus or have plans to open a campus in Poland, which is currently a core European market for that institution. So I think we're going to see some growth in Europe. You know, it's linked really to universities future-proofing or planning for life after the European Union. And then absolutely, I think the online is going to be massive for universities. You know, we're seeing that even universities are offering more online programs to students who are already on campus because the way that they're studying is changing. So, you know, even students who are studying on the home campus are having, you know, more online delivery in amongst those traditional lectures and seminars and lab work. So there's clearly some of that, that's happening on campuses. But, you know, we saw again in the international student survey this year that kind of international students are seeing over the next 5 or 10 years that their entire degree may not be studied overseas. Some of it may be online. Some of it may be face-to-face. And they expect the mobility opportunity to become greater so that they can spend time in different parts of the world for the one degree. Yeah. So I think we're going to see a lot of interesting factors at play going forward, given the advancement in technologies and learning technologies.
Right. That's very interesting that students won't go to Europe to attend an English university. Is it a testament to the quality of the university, or is it because of English as the universal language for commerce?
I think that's a great question. What we've seen in Europe, I think, over time is an increasing willingness of universities in Europe to teach in English. So if you look at the Netherlands, the Scandinavian countries, you know, even France, there are opportunities to study in English in great universities. So if you look at a university like Leiden in the Netherlands, you know, an old university with a great research heritage, teaching programs in English. So clearly there is a demand from students to have their programs in English. And, you know, I think that can relate to the employment opportunities. It's going to be obviously good for students to have that, you know, that English language you know, teaching, learning experience, you know, as they prepare for the world of work. So clearly there's that factor at play. But equally, universities in the UK have a reputation for teaching quality and research quality. And that's, you know, a kind of heritage and a reputation that's renowned the world over. Yeah. And is kind of borne out by the strength of many overseas graduates who've gone on to great things in the world of work and commerce and in other areas as a result of their time studying UK programs. So that reputation for quality for the UK is still very strong. So I think that will also drive a student's willingness to study on a UK university program in another country in Europe or somewhere else.
I guess I'll end with this. Where do you see the... what role do you see education agents playing going forward? Will they still be relevant because of how information has been democratized? It's more easy to get information now. You don't have to mail or write a letter to the university asking for either site visits or more information. Do people still rely on education agents a lot?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and tech. It's something that I've thought about a lot over the years. So, if I think back to my first trip to Hong Kong and China in 1999 for a UK university, when I went to do those recruitment visits, British Council fairs and visiting agents and visiting universities, you know, I rang my travel agent and they told me about 3 or 4 different flight options. They booked my hotel and the travel agent delivered in the post a cardboard envelope with some flight tickets and hotel vouchers. And that's how I went on my first trip. Now, you know, these days, that's not how we book airline and hotels. So there's been a massive shift in those industries around kind of transparency and going online. Yeah. If you look at education, it has a tendency to move in some way slower than other industries. So when I went on that first trip, I was visiting agents and I was doing fairs and I was visiting universities, and universities still do that now. Yeah. So that hasn't changed dramatically in terms of the key ways that universities engage with students overseas. Those fundamentals, if you like, are still there. But what has changed is the increasing availability of information and transparency for students. So students can now make complex education choices with the information in their hands. So what we found through our surveys when we talked to students about the importance of education agents, what's clearly changed over the years is that the agent is no longer selecting the university or the course for them. So the student is in the driving seat increasingly, in front of the parents, in front of friends and family, and in front of the agent in terms of choice. So they're choosing, they know what they want to be when they grow up, yeah, and what they want to do. Yeah, they're choosing the course. They're choosing the country and the university. What the agents do is provide, I think, a lot of support because the student's remote from the university. So They're providing advice and support through the whole process. They're helping with visas. They're supporting applications for accommodation at the university. They're providing an orientation support. They've got great experience of working with universities, so they're providing parents with a soundboard for questions, providing advice, and they're able to do that, you know, in the local country. So there's an important part for agents to play, and they still play an important part around information, advice, and support. But increasingly, what we're seeing is the student is making the choice. Yeah.
It's an exciting space. I wonder what was going to happen in the next 20 years. Thank you very much, Andy, for coming to talk to me about this. It's been enlightening.
And Tech, thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.